Hi, this is Dana Huff. It is Friday, October 29th, 2009. For the last, I guess perhaps the last week or so, I've been listening to Will Wheaton's podcast, Memories from the Future, in which he talks about his behind-the-scenes memories and makes a lot of jokes about basically his time when he was on Star Trek The Next Generation as Wesley Crusher. And as he repeatedly points out in his podcasts, the show eventually became quite a very good show, but the first season of The Next Generation had some truly horrible TV moments, and Star Trek fans, I guess, one of my favorite quotes about the podcast, somebody said that if you have equal moments of facepalm and nostalgia when you watch these shows, it's the kind of book for you. I definitely want to read the book, and it's been fascinating for me, at any rate, to listen to Will Wheaton talking about how the book was indeed created. And it got me thinking, not that anybody's interested or even asked me about this kind of thing, but I wrote a book myself. I actually started it, gosh, about 10 years ago, I suppose, and worked on it very hard. I enrolled in essentially a creative writing course, which is not something I necessarily recommend. I'm not 100% sure, and keep in mind I say this as a writing teacher. I'm an English teacher, for those of you who don't know. Even though I am a writing teacher, I'm not 100% sure that creative writing is something that can really be taught. I think the gift of storytelling, the fact that you are able to entertain people, even to have an ear for dialogue, fleshing out a story in terms of imagery or description and that kind of thing, I'm not sure that everybody can learn that. I think pretty much everybody can learn how to do the kind of writing that most people might need to do for their jobs, how to write a report, how to create a resume, how to create presentations, how to do basically expository writing, is I guess the best word for it. Anything that you need to do to explain or to perhaps to persuade or to argue. I think the kinds of critical writing can be taught, but creative writing is pretty tough. I've taught students poetry in the past, and they have a lot of fun writing it, but, you know, to be quite honest with you, it's a mixed bag when it comes out, and you can definitely pick those out who have kind of an ear for it, and those who are really just kind of not getting it, and it's not engaging. I've heard lots of advice about writing over the years. One of the things that I was so thrilled to hear Chinua Achebe say, and he, by the way, if you're not familiar with him, is the author of Things Fall Apart. One of the things that I was thrilled to hear him say on the BBC World Book Club podcast that I downloaded quite some time ago and just recently listened to was very similar to what Michelangelo says about his sculptures, that the statue is already inside the piece of marble, and he just needs to use the chisel to free it. And Achebe says kind of something similar about the books. You know, somebody in the podcast asked him a question about why he did something or other, and his response was basically, well, the character did that. I just kind of followed what he wanted to do, and when I tried to fight it, when I tried to make it come out the way that I thought I wanted it to be, it wasn't working. And so I just went with what the character wanted to do. And having had the experience of writing, I can say those kinds of things are true. It's very strange to say it or even to believe it, I think, before you've had the experience of writing something. Generally speaking, people think that you're crazy. at least I thought people were crazy when they talked about characters walking into stories and doing and saying things and you didn't know they were going to do and say. And I thought, well, that's crazy because it's the author who controls all of that. I don't believe that is true anymore. I can totally understand now why the ancient Greeks believed in the muses. It makes complete sense to me after having written a book. Why they might feel that there were elements of that creative process that were outside of their control, and all they could really do was ask for the guidance and be grateful when the muse descended and offered the storyteller or any other kind of artist for that matter the gift of being able to tell the story. And I remember, I'm not going to say that my book is up there with the classics or anything, but I did kind of want to talk about it a little bit because I haven't really talked about it at all on this blog. And, you know, it's something that I spent a lot of time on. It's very close to me. The characters that I created in that book, even though it has a very limited readership, are still alive, at least to me, in my mind, which is something that Alice Walker says about her characters in The Color Purple. She mentions in the, well, it's the same podcast, the BBC World Book Club, where she basically mentions that they visit her. And I kind of feel that way in some respects. Sometimes I don't feel like I'm done with them. I don't know what to do with them. I did start a sequel at one point for one of my characters, but I never went anywhere with it, and I don't know, I couldn't really get into it, so it never went anywhere. I'm not sorry I played with the idea, I just couldn't develop it into anything. But basically, NaNoWriMo is getting ready to start in a couple of days, and it's got me thinking because I have either been extremely foolish or very smart, and I won't know which it is until the end of the month, maybe even further down the road, decided to commit to telling a new story because I feel like I've got one to tell, and I have so been itching to write again, and I just really want to get this opportunity. I think it is a good opportunity to write something because there are so many other writers out there working at the same time, and there's this sort of encouragement, and there's also the impetus of the deadline that kind of hangs over your head, and the certain number of words, and the reassurances that it can be crap, and all of the other things that go along with that, that it's freeing in some way. I did try NaNoWriMo a couple of years ago and didn't finish. And I do feel kind of badly about that. I would like to try and use the opportunity to do something with it. As a matter of fact, that book that I started a couple of years ago is still on my computer in pieces. I wrote a series of vignettes and don't know how to knit them together. And I don't even know if I ever will. But it was this great character I created. And maybe I'll talk about her at a later date because I really don't want to spend the entire time talking about that book. But I created this great character, and she's just sort of walking around in my head going, all right, what am I going to do now? You know, do something with me. She's very real to me as well. I feel like I know her, and she doesn't have a story yet, and she needs one. But I digress, like I said. So the book that I wrote a couple of years ago, I knew was going to be a young adult book before I ever did anything with it. And like I said, I enrolled in this creative writing. It's basically a correspondence course that I enrolled in. And the main reason I did it, and I don't know if this is selfish or not, because it was actually kind of stupid to pay for a creative writing course if this is the only thing that you want out of it, I guess. I didn't know anybody that I felt comfortable with reading it and editing it. And I knew that I would need some guidance. Because it's very hard when, I suppose, you're kind of the writer in the family or whatever, what have you. It's very hard to find anybody who is able to give you feedback beyond, well, it's good, I liked it. And that's really not what you want. You want to say, listen, this passage right here stops the forward motion of your plot. You need to cut it. It's really not helping you at all. So I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the process of writing that book. And one of the things that I did, like I said, with the creative writing course is I had access to an instructor who looked at each chapter of the book. And so I had the editorial assistance I needed. The shame of it is I actually finished the book and never finished the course. So I don't have the nice little certificate that says, here you go, you've written, you know, the novel for the course or whatever. So, I don't know, I guess that's kind of a shame. But, you know, it is what it is. At the time, I had a lot going on, and I couldn't do too much at the time. So my book was called A Question of Honor, which is a title, I don't remember when I settled on the title. I know the title did not come first. And I hope, or I think, that that's true most of the time. I think that the title should come naturally out of whatever it is that you're trying to say when you are trying to write your book. And I suppose that I knew I wanted to do something with medieval Wales. And what I wanted to talk about today in this first podcast about the process of writing that book is how I came to decide on the setting of that book. Back when I was in college, I had the great fortune to be able to sign up for at University of Georgia, they called it a topics in literature course. And they were basically courses designed by the instructor that were not necessarily part of the, I don't want to say the word curriculum because that's like a high school word. But they weren't part of the natural catalog, I suppose. They were like sort of one-off courses that the instructor would pull together based on their personal interests. And I think you could take topics in literature like up to 4 times. Of course, I'm sure it had to be a different topic every time. And I needed an English class. It wasn't necessarily that I may have been interested in the class that I signed up for. I can't honestly remember anymore. It was like 1992. It's a long, or maybe 1991. It was 1992 or 1991. Probably 92. But that's been a while ago for me, and I can't believe it's been that long since I was in school. I feel so old. But anyway, I signed up for this course that Dr. Elise Henkin at the University of Georgia, who is still an inspiration to me, everything I learned in that class. I signed up for her topics in literature course in Celtic literature. And it was a 10-week course. UGA had not moved over to the semester system yet. They were still in the quarter system. And it was basically divided into Welsh and Irish literature. We started with Irish literature. We read some of the great stories about Cú Chulainn. And we read we read some of the stories from the Finn cycle. We learned all about the Tuatha De Danann and, you know, basically the great Irish mythological stories. And let me tell you, they are as wonderful as anything the Greeks and Romans did. I think people just don't read them because the Greeks and Romans tend to be thought of as this sort of, I guess, foundational literature in the Western canon, whereas the Irish maybe didn't have that sort of reach. But they are wonderful, and if you get a chance to read early Irish myths and sagas or any of those other kinds of books that are similar, that they have the Irish stories, and you really should. One of my favorites was the Toine, and it looks like Tain. It's T-A-I-N. According to my instructor, and I hope that I don't offend any Irish people who might be listening to this. I mean, yeah, right, people are listening to this. But anyway, if I say it wrong, but she pronounced it the Toine, and I've said it that way. And the translation I read was by Thomas Kinsella. It was awesome. Very, very good story. Queen Maeve, who is Shakespeare's sort of inspiration for Queen Mab in Romeo and Juliet, is just a wonderful character. She's very strong. She's not, I suppose, unlike Athena. Keep thinking of that because I'm teaching the Odyssey right now, and you know, she's a very strong woman, sort of a very manly like woman, you know, and often goes in disguise as a man. And I asked my students the other day, why is that? Why doesn't she ever disguise herself as a woman? And and one of the students in my class just nailed it, they wouldn't have listened to anything that she had to say. And that is the plight of women throughout, I guess, the ages. And I'm glad I live in a time where people will listen to the things that women have to say, although I don't think they listen to them as much as they do to men. But again, that's me digressing. So we studied the Irish literature, which was wonderful. And it really captured my attention, and I loved it. And I loved learning about the Irish year. I still teach that every year to my BritLit students. I teach them all about the holidays of Samhain and Imbolc and Beltane and Lunasa. And I just think it's fascinating that in some fashion these holidays survive to this day. And I think it's fascinating to think of the year as a wheel, because indeed it does make a lot of sense. The whole idea of cycling is so apt, I think, if you want to talk about how the calendar works. But anyway, the Welsh literature, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the beautiful way it sounded. The names were just so pretty. We read the Mabinogion, which I guess most translations of the Mabinogion these days are also... they put them together with several of the Celtic romances. The earliest King Arthur stories, for instance, Cuilic and Olwen was in my book. And one thing that I found so fascinating is these characters here being in their Welsh carnations. Arthur is Arthur, but Guinevere is Gwenwyvar, which is interesting to me. Marion Zimmer Bradley took that same spelling and pronunciation for her character of Guinevere in the Mists of Avalon. So I'm hoping, I think maybe she was aware of the Mabinogion and these other romances. And Gawain is in the story as well, and he's Gwalchmae. And there's also Sir Kay, who spells his name C-E-I, at least in the translation I read, and Bedivere is Bedwyr. So you get to meet these characters. Lancelot, of course, being a French creation, is not in these stories, and I like that because Gawain's my favorite anyway. So I don't know, there was something about the beauty of these stories, and they are wonderful, and they have inspired other writers. Lloyd Alexander comes to mind. Lloyd Alexander wrote a series for children, actually intermediate readers, called the Chronicles of Prydain. And they start with the Book of Three, The Black Cauldron, which Disney made a travesty out of, The Castle of Clear, Taran Wanderer, and the High King was the last one. And they are wonderful, and I think anybody should read them. They're really good. So he was inspired, Lloyd Alexander, by the same stories. The stories of of Son of Methonwy, the Dream of Ronabwy, the story of Pwyll, Prince of Dyfed. And so there's lots of really, really good stuff in these stories. And I just became fascinated with Wales. So I came to the place where I felt like I wanted to really explore this place, and I wanted to set a story there, and I was so interested in the Middle Ages. At the time, I was intrigued by the Society for the Creative, Society for Creative Anachronism, or the SCA. It's one of those organizations that, in theory, sounds like it would be so cool. But I've been involved in it in the past, and I've just found that in reality, it's just, I don't know, if it's the dynamic with the different kinds of people who may or may not be as into the same things as you are. It's just, in practice, I did not find it to be what I was hoping to be, and I didn't really enjoy it that much. Not to say other people wouldn't. I think it's especially fun maybe if you like the fighting aspect of it. But I think if you are not into that, maybe it's a little harder to get into some of the other things. So medieval Wales I found very fascinating, and I guess my persona that I created for the SCA was my influence. her name was Gwentlian, which basically translates as white linen. The double L sound in Welsh is not a sound that we have in English. It sounds, I guess the closest thing it sounds to is if you have like a TL sound to together. And I said it wrong for a very long time. I know that Dr. Henkin tried to get us to say it right, but it was like we just couldn't hear it. But it's sort of like a tla. It sounds almost like a C sound, but it's not. So her name looks like Gwenlian with two double L's, but it's Gwentlian. And there you can kind of hear it maybe when you hear it faster. So anytime you see those double L's in Welsh, and they have a lot of them, you know, you like Llewellyn and things like that, you will definitely, that would be how it would be pronounced. And I just thought it was beautiful, and I really wanted to set a story there. So I started really doing a lot of research. Things were starting to become really available on the internet, and I owe a great debt to websites like Castles of Wales. They're still online, and they still have beautiful pictures of castles and things that I found inspirational. I also really enjoyed Gerald of Wales's journey through Wales and a description of Wales, which was written around the same time as my book is set. It's actually Gerald was writing a little later than the setting of my story, but it was so helpful because he was a contemporary writer describing his Wales, the Wales that he saw in the 11th century, which was so helpful to me as sort of setting the book. So I just fell in love with Wales, and I knew I wanted to write about a book there. Well, then I picked up Outlander by Diana Gabaldon, which is one of, I think, the most perfect books. The setting is just, she has such a natural ear for dialect and the characters, and it's so funny, in the last few years I've heard so many people talking about how the first 50, 100 or whatever pages are kind of hard to get through, and then the story really picks up, and I did not find that to be the case at all, but maybe that's because I'm a genealogy nerd, and I found the idea of Claire and Frank going to Scotland to research family history entertaining, so maybe I'm just the weirdo, and everybody else knows what they're talking about, but I was hooked from the very beginning of the book. And loved it. And I thought, wow, this is so cool. And I, of course, had been starting to do my family research and discovered that possibly the Cunninghams in my family and certainly the Kennedys in my family came from Scotland. And then, of course, I did the whole thing that I think a lot of people do if they're Irish or Scottish. They really just sort of, like, that's what I am, and I was very fascinated by it, did a lot of research into it, you know, wanted to learn about the clans, wanted to learn about Scotland, and read biographies of Robert the Bruce, and, you know, just really got into it and became fascinated by Scotland, and it does have a fascinating history. So then I was like, oh gosh, I really want to go to Scotland too with this story. So I actually did wind up having my character be the child of a Welsh mother and a Scottish father. And I knew I wanted him to be kind of, why is he here? Why is he in Wales? Don't his family back in Scotland wonder what happened to him? People didn't travel the way that we travel today. They went on pilgrimages, certainly, but they... And, you know, crusades and things like that. But it wasn't the kind of thing that, you know, an ordinary guy would do. And I decided that he had a family in Scotland. He was married. And I decided that he came to Wales. And to be honest with you, it's been so long that I wrote the book. This is embarrassing. I can't even remember why he wound up in Wales. There was some good reason. He was doing something. Maybe he was, I think he was on pilgrimage, as a matter of fact, now that I'm thinking about it. But he was coming through, and he fell in love with my protagonist's mother, and he stayed and abandoned his family in Scotland. And that set up a great dynamic that came into play later on when my character decides... I don't think she really decides to go to Scotland. It's sort of a freak accident that she winds up there. The editor of my book thought it was a little too pat, but I left it in there. Because, and, you know, she thought it was too coincidental, I should say. But I thought it was great. She's trying to run away from, she believes that she's committed a crime. She's not sure if she's done something wrong that has resulted in somebody's death. And she's just trying to get as far away from it as she can. And so she gets on this ship, and through the course of, the discovery of who these people are on the ship and everything, she discovers that this is her uncle, her dad's brother. And so she just decides, okay, I do have this family. I will go check this out. And so I had the opportunity then to have my character be in both of these places that I had come to love as settings, and I was really excited and happy to be able to do that. There was a lady who actually sent me some materials who came from the area in Wales that my story is set, and she helped me a lot just with some little details like what kinds of plants grow there and what kinds of animals and things like that are around, because those are the kinds of details that can really make or break a story. Those are the kinds of details that can bother somebody. For instance, I am absolutely in love with the Poisonwood Bible by Barbara Kingsolver. And she has, her characters come from a real small town in Georgia. And basically, one of the things that really bothered me about the Poisonwood Bible is that she has her characters as students at Bethlehem High School. And I lived in Winder, and I knew there was no such place. So those are the kinds of things that would bother somebody. It's a minor detail. I understand why she did it. It would just be a huge distraction to have to explain that they actually went to this other high school that really exists, that doesn't have the same name, and what's the point, and how few people are actually going to know it. But I knew that if anybody who lived in that area of Wales read in my book, just on the off chance somebody ever saw it, that I talked about some plant growing there that didn't actually grow there, it would bother them, and they would wonder and question the authenticity of everything else that I said. So those kinds of details are so important. As a matter of fact, I actually thought to myself as I was, and I just want to talk about this one scene, later when Gwendolyn is boarding the ship that her uncle commands, and she's going from Chester to the area where they live in Scotland, which is present-day Ayrshire, there was this paragraph in my original story all about how Gwendolyn was basically watching the sailors loading cargo on the ship. And I had got this, the idea to include this from a great book that I got for reference purposes called Medieval Ships and Shipping. And if you're going to write a book and you have, it's set in the Middle Ages and your characters need to do any sailing, it's a really good book. It's out of print. As you might imagine, that's not the kind of thing that there's a lot of call for probably. But I really thought it was a great book for me. And I kind of have this paragraph in my book because I wanted to show off that I knew and understood how cargo was loaded on a ship in the Middle Ages. And, you know, it was one of these things where my character was fascinated by it because, I suppose, because I was fascinated by it. And my editor looked at it and was like, why is this in here? I am totally not interested in this. You really probably should cut it. It's stopping the forward motion of your story. This is a passage I was thinking about when I said that earlier. And I was thinking to myself, oh my God, she's so right. And cut, you know, just, and it, that passage went out. And now it is not in the book. So that's how I came up with the setting and a little bit about my writing process. One of the things that I would like to do is talk about this again some other time if anybody's interested and would like to hear more about the process of writing this or about the writing process if that's the kind of thing that you're fascinated by. I will, I think, maybe post future podcasts with that kind of thing, maybe even reading some passages from the book itself. I am proud of the book. I think it's very good. I did send it to a couple of agents. They weren't interested, and I did not find that discouraging because I feel that it's very hard to break into the publishing industry. It's a matter of kind of a break. It can be a matter of who you know in some cases, and sometimes perfectly excellent books never get discovered, if you will, or published, and there's a lot of really bad stuff that gets through from people who, for whatever reason, get the break. And so I don't consider it a failing necessarily of the book so much as I just, at the time in my life when I finished it up and was thinking about it, I really didn't have the time to dedicate to finding somebody. And you really do need the time. You need to be dogged. You need to be determined. You need to send it to lots of different people. You need to be prepared to read the rejections. And you need to, you know, be prepared to do whatever you need to do. And I just wasn't. And I decided that it really didn't need to stay on my computer, that it needed to go someplace. And so what I wound up doing is using a self-publisher called Lulu. And what makes Lulu different from other self-publishers is they don't charge you. It's not a vanity press. So Will Wheaton, I think, went with Lulu to publish Memories from the Future. I had already done my book with them. So he came along and discovered them later after having some frustrating experiences in the publishing industry. He felt like his book, Just a Geek, was mismarketed as a Star Trek memoir, which it really wasn't. And ironically, now he's written one, which is kind of funny. But basically, he was very frustrated by the way it was handled and felt like he didn't have the control, and there was this intermediary between him and the readers. And I decided, look, I blog. I consider that published writing. I tell my students that it's publishing. Who am I to say that it's not publishing just because I use this? Now, granted, my book has not reached a wide audience, but it's reached more of an audience than it would have if it had stayed on my computer and not gone anywhere. So I recommend Lulu. I think that they are great if you don't have the time to do the kind of thing that you need to do in order to get the book out there. I would recommend that if you can afford it, you want to go ahead and purchase ISBN numbers and things like that. You have to buy ISBN numbers in bulk. You can't buy just one, which is why my book does not have one. But it is available from Amazon. If you did a search for my name on Amazon, you should be able to find my book. But it's called A Question of Honor, and it's by Dana Swierhuff, S-W-I-E-R, which might make it a little easier to find if you're looking for it. Anyway, Lulu was a great idea because more people have looked at the book than would have if it had stayed on my computer. But I don't know, I do still have the dream of one day being able to actually go to a bookstore and seeing my book there. I don't necessarily think that, like I said, I think the book is pretty good. I just didn't have the time to dedicate to what I needed to do to get it published by a major house. My editor seemed to feel that it would have been good for Clarion, and she was pushing me in that direction. And I just, at the time, there's so much you have to learn about query letters and how do you present yourself. And I really wanted to just get it out there. And I don't know, maybe we're moving towards that. Maybe the publishers need to watch out, because I'm sure there's a lot of really bad stuff published by writers who use Lulu, but there's got to be other really good books out there too. And I hope that the fact that it's something like that doesn't dissuade somebody from giving it a chance. But anyway, that is the story of how I chose the setting for my book. Maybe next time I can talk about individual chapters or or how I started writing, or just sort of looking at it. I really thought Will Wheaton's ideas about this was my process, this is what I was thinking as I wrote this joke, or this is what I was thinking as I did that, were kind of interesting for me to listen to as a writer. And I personally find the process to be fascinating, and thought, you know, I have memories associated with this book I would like to kind of share and get out there. And if you're still listening at this point, God bless you and thank you. And let me know what you think. Let me know what questions you have, if you have any, and I can address those in a future recording. All right. So this has been my first podcast about a question of honor, and good night.